What do you mean, I can't do noses?
What I say, you can't do noses.
Me? Can't do noses?
That's right, you're absolutely hopeless at noses. You can't draw them for toffee. Oh, what a beautiful day it's turning out to be. The sun's stretching and yawning. It looks plaintive. It looks shy and celibate. What do you think, Sid? Do you think the sun looks shy and celibate? I wish I could tell the difference between Brent geese and barnacle geese.
Now you listen to me, Alma. A guy does not win the Pulitzer Prize 3 times if a guy cannot draw noses. No way. Never been known. That's one of the main reasons why I won the son of a bitch. Shit hot at noses. I'm the best. Geese? What about geese? What's so special about geese? In your book, I might be no good at noses, but I sure do know about geese. They got long necks and hissing eyes. Just like you.
Listen.
What?
Listen. I can hear that noise in the attic.
Jeez, not that again, not that.
We moved to this meek-browed town in the lowing western hills early in the spring when the geese were anxious for the north. We swapped our house in the States for this mellow, sun-soaked manor in a lonely valley, plush with birds, rushing with feckless streams, and teeming with cliches and orphaned metaphors. In case you're wondering, I have an honours degree in English literature from a highly respected provincial university in the highly respectable north of England. I was features editor of the Student's Rag for 1.25 years. Hence my way with words. Hence my feel for their sounds and rhythms.
This goddamn country. These son of a bitch farmers with their addled teeth. These women with asses like howitzers. I want to go home, Mama. I want to go back. I need hot dogs. I need root beer and donuts.
Have a cashew nut.
How very good.
It's a manor house we live in. Gosh, how fearfully posh. How frightfully country. It belongs to a couple of academics. We haven't met them, but we've seen their photographs laid out on the top of the grand piano in the drawing room. They look like disgruntled storks. Right now they're staying in our apartment back home. We didn't have any photographs to lay out for them. We've loads of Sid's cartoons framed in passepartout. And it's a manor house we live in. Gollum. Not a couple of academics snuffling dry the letters of Mr. Chekhov, our beloved Anton the Great. My dog eats nuts. We have nothing in the house but backache pills. Next morning, we had another of our confrontations. I heard a noise in the studio. Right, I said to myself, I'll sort this out once and for all.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know you were here. I thought I heard a noise.
Well, of course you heard a noise. I'm drinking strong liquor.
But it's only 9:30 in the morning.
This is my chum, Edgar Tweedy.
How do you do, Mr. Tweedy? I think I've seen you in the pub.
Well, of course you've seen him in the pub. Where else would he be? Edgar is the editor of the local paper in these parts. Under those circumstances, wouldn't you spend all your time drinking yourself senseless in the pub? Have another whiskey, Edgar.
Thank you. I'm much obliged.
Edgar has made me a proposition. Isn't that right, Edgar?
Yes.
He wants me to draw cartoons for his paper.
What?
25 quid a throw.
What?
I could go to 30.
Mr. Tweedy, you are either addled with drink, or you are a complete nincompoop, totally unworldly, and completely unaware of the status of the man whose strong liquor you're guzzling with quite contemptible gusto. Mr. Fiedelman is over here on special assignment from his paper to draw a series of cartoons depicting the state and status of your country at the time of the millennium. He's under exclusive contract. And even if he weren't, Mr. Tweedy, I should not allow him to contribute one jot or blot to the contemptible rag you have the profound effrontery to designate a newspaper. Do I make myself clear, Mr. Tweedy?
I'm addled with drink, madam.
Good for you, buddy boy. Have another slug.
Thank you.
I'm going.
That's
fine by me, honey lamb. Hey.
What?
If I take 40 quid, will that be okay with you? I have to tell you something, Edgar, old buddy, before you dip into your wallet.
What's that?
I'm no good at noses.
I hate him. I loathe him. I love it here. Standing on the dusk-skimmed hill at the head of the valley. Below me, the town scrunches itself into the folds of the sun like a cat making its bed for the night. In the distance, I can see the vale and the channel and the black Welsh mountains grazing the skies like misty black Welsh cattle. I won the B.J. Hickmore Award for descriptive prose at my highly respected provincial university in the north of England. I would have won it the following year, only I got into difficulties with my seascapes and basking sharks off Lizard Head. I hate him. I loathe him. I despise him. I wonder where he is now. I wonder what he's doing. I wonder where he is. After all this time, I pretend I don't know. Oh, Alma, honey. Oh, Alma.
Can I tempt you to another libation, Mr. Fiddleman?
You surely can, Henry. And make it a tripler. Easy on the ice.
Certainly.
That guy. He's here to bury me.
What's that?
The company has sent him from the head office to replace me.
Ah.
Well, it sticks out a mile if only you bother to look. That's your trouble, old boy. You don't bother to look. You don't bother to observe. To those who bother to observe, it's perfectly obvious what's going to happen. Now, give him 6 months to learn the ropes and pick my brain and ingratiate himself with the community, and then, whoosh, I'll be out of my arse. It's very remiss of you not seeing that, old boy. If I didn't know you as well as I don't, I'd say it was downright insulting and offensive. I'd say it was... What are you doing?
Sketching you. Making a cartoon.
May I see?
Sure.
That's jolly good, old boy. Well done. I've got slight reservations about the nose, but...
Here we are, Mr. Fiddleman. One travel scotch and easy on the ice.
Thank you, Henry.
Good night.
Cheers. Excuse me.
Yes?
Don't I get a drink?
You didn't ask. I hope you don't mind my talking shop, Mr. Fiddleman, but being in the presence of such a distinguished newspaper man as yourself, I'm dying to pick your brains and...
You.
I beg your pardon?
Get the man a drink. Now.
Yes, certainly, of course.
I'll say one thing about you, old man.
What's that, Edgar, old
buddy boy? You do wear the most excellent boots. Porpoise, perhaps?
What?
I'm not a native of these parts.
No?
No. This is a land shriven by goblins.
Is that so, Edgar?
When I go to bed at night, I hear the shrieks of witches. This whole bloody country, from the tip of the Lizard to the rump end of John O'Groats, is haunted by witches and taunted by goblins.
And that is your assessment of contemporary England?
No. It's my assessment of myself.
I'm in bed. I'm reading. It's a book about this man sets off to Spain with a tin of treacle biscuits. Sid came in an hour ago. I heard him curse and stumble. He'll be in the studio now working on his cartoon, slugging back the rye. He always works best when he's sotted with liquor. He draws his figures as though you were carving out the Dolomites. He snarls and he snorts. He whinnies with sour triumph. He produces his cartoons like a man ripping out his guts through his navel with a rusting bayonet. Gosh. Just listen to that simile. It's good to have a firm background in English, isn't it? When we moved in here in the early spring, Sid prowled round the house like a stricken circus lion in a toothless cage. When he saw the two master bedrooms on the first floor, he said, "Hey, separate bedrooms. I'm going to like it here." And he plunged into the room with the portrait of the naked lady above the bed, and he slammed the door, and he bolted it. And we haven't slept together since. Boo-hoo. Boo-hoo. I'm going to put out the light. There, I've put out the light. If only it was so easy to put out a love affair. Listen. There's that noise again. Someone's padding outside my room. Sid? Sid? Is that you? It was like me. Someone's coming in.
Who are you? What are you doing here? What do you want?
They've gone. They've forgotten me. Pardon?
Who are you? What the hell are you doing in this house?
Neatum poops. The girl should have told me. Why is the world full of neatum poops? Pardon? Never mind. Sit here a bit. Life slipped by just as if I'd never lived at all. I don't know. I lie down a bit in that bed yonder. Yes. I lie in that bed, and perhaps in the fullness of time I'll see where my strength is gone. Pardon?
Sid! Sid! Sid!
Oh, for God's sake, Alma, you were dreaming.
I was not dreaming. Someone came into my room and spoke to me.
Brandy, that's it. You were hitting the brandy.
I was not drinking. I was not hitting the brandy. How dare you say that? I went to bed perfectly sober. Drinking? Drinking, he says. Look at the state of you last night. You're completely pie-eyed. God alone knows how much you and Edgar put away last night. God knows.
That's it. You got it, Alma.
What the hell are you talking about?
Edgar. I'm talking about Edgar.
Edgar?
Sure, he was the guy who crept into your room last night.
What?
He was after a woman. He told me in the pub he was desperate for a woman. He snuffled into his sherry and said he craved a woman with full thighs and long legs and piercing green eyes and dark navy blue hair and big tits and... Hey, he wanted a woman just like you, Alma. So it all figures out. It was Edgar who crept into your room.
You pig! You rank and filthy pig! I hate you. I loathe you.
He was there. I'll come with you.
But you never come with me.
I'll come with you.
So he came with me. He sat hunched like an aged marmot in the back of the car. He did not get out when I called in at the WI to buy pasties and homemade cherry pies. A robin sang in the thickets by the mill race sluice gate.
They found a dead body there 10 years ago.
What?
It was an old guy. A hobo. Tramp. His throat had been slit. Very neatly. They never discovered it, did it?
How do you know all this?
Edgar told me. With glee.
The car coughed and sputtered just before the brow of the slow and lonely hill. I said very softly, "Don't do that." We came to the big, bruised, goaty town with the mainline station and the gaunt-shouldered mills and the blue-chinned farmhands slouching the street corners. I went to the supermarket and bought provisions. And for my aged lover, I purchased with relish the inner organs of beasts and fowls, nutty gizzards, liver slices, hen god's roes, and mutton kidneys with a tang of faintly scented urine. Oh, hark at me. I told you I had a first-class honours degree in English Lit lurking in the background. When I got back to the car, Sid said,
"I've had a gutful of this goddamn country. I want out, Alma. I want to go home."
He didn't look at me as I climbed into the car. He didn't speak. But as we drove away, I swore I could hear someone else speak.
They're gone. I'm all alone in the house. Never mind. I'll sit here a bit. He hasn't put his coat on. He'll have gone off in his light one, I'll be bound. I should have seen to it. These young people have no sense. These drawings of his. He calls them cartoons. I can't make head nor tail of them. The man's a neat and poop. The day before yesterday. Pardon? Oh, dear. I must be growing deaf.
Yes, I'm certain I heard someone else speak.
I'm going crazy. You know that, Alma? This country is driving me insane. I don't want to drink in pubs with yokels ankle deep in cow shit. I don't want to play table skittles. I want to play poker with the guys and talk about the ball game and go hunting in Maine and hear the loons wailing and... I hate this place. I can't work. Everything I've done here is crap. Goblins.
What?
No witches. And your voices.
My voices. The rain slicked itself and teemed as the wheels cosily crunched the gravel path and drew up outside the front door of the Mellow Mansion. We established ourselves in the dining room. Dark and gloomy, the dining room, all oak panels and yellowing ceilings like old men's teeth. Sid grumped and spilled sardine oil down the front of the white linen trousers I'd bought him from the catalogue the week before. For heaven's sake, Sid, watch what you're doing. You're turning into a really messy eater. Like an old man. Like an old man with a fusty cough and a hollow chest and...
And you're turning into a pain in the butt.
Thank you.
You are, Alma. You are. You're a pain in the butt. An English pain in the butt.
I can't help being English.
You weren't English when I first met you. You swore hard. You drank hard. In a sock. You were a sensation.
You're spraying crumbs on the rug.
You see? You see, you're turning into an English grudge.
Oh, look. There's a pair of bullfinches working the apple tree. How lovely. What gorgeous colours. The flush pink breast, the female's creamy brown, black heads like roué spats.
I can't stand all these metaphors.
Similes.
What?
They're not metaphors I'm using. They're similes.
Oh, shoot. I quite forgot. First class honors degree in English literature. Man, oh, man, can you ever forgive me? I hate it here. I want to go home. I don't hear voices. Why don't I hear voices? Why don't I see goblins and fairies? Maybe if I heard voices, I'd begin to draw again. Is that the only way to understand this country, Alma? Hear voices and sport with goblins and fairies?
Alma! Alma! Are you in the garden?
Yes. You want to join me?
No! I'm going to the pub with Edgar. Who's the cheeky boy, then?
He wanted me to chuckle. But my chuckling days with Sid were long since over. I heard a song thrush singing fit to burst. I remembered making love to Sid all those years ago. Fit to burst I was. And oh my God, did I burst every time. Which, when we were in our prime, was most nights of the week. I was about to go back to the house to drink a toast to the absence of Sid, when I heard this noise. Feet shuffling on a gravel path. A voice muttering. Who's there? Who is it? Who are you? There was no response. There was no need for a response. I knew who it was. It was the man who'd come plodding into my bedroom last night. But this time, I felt no fear. I was calm and composed as I turned from the man-draped path into the arbor. He was sitting apart, A voice muttering. Flimsed grey hair crackling wearily over his collar. He was wearing a black jacket and a white waistcoat. There was a tremor to his hands. There was a damp, white film sliming his eyes. He did not look up when I said, "Good evening. And who might you be?" There was a pause. And then he said,
"The day before yesterday."
"What?" "I don't understand."
"The day before yesterday? I'm a bit deaf. Pardon?"
"Who are you?"
"The gentleman who was here at Easter ate over a gallon of pickled gherkin. My name is Fern. I am exactly 87 years of age. Or am I considerably older? Pardon?"
"What are you doing here?"
"I've been here a long time. In the old days, we used to have generals and barons and admirals at our dances. Not now. Not now. I feel so frail. In the old days, the old master used to dose us all with powdered sealing wax, no matter what was ailing us. I've been taking powdered sealing wax for the past 50 years or more. Maybe that's what keeps me alive. Pardon?"
And with that he sneezed. Why didn't he?
"Not now. Not..."
And he left behind a scent of patchouli and nuts. He left no hint of his voice. But as I lingered unafraid and curious in the arbor, I heard other voices, other sounds. I heard a violin's cheek. I heard the drug-rasped grunt of mules and the creak of wooden saddles. I heard the voices of Sid and Edgar. And they were in the Reeling pub.
"Why does Elma never come to the pub in the evening these days?"
"Ah, she's listening to her voices."
"Her voices?"
"Yes. She's taken to hearing voices. Some women of her age get hot flushes. Alma hears voices."
"I hear voices, too."
"What?"
"Would you care for a pickled gherkin?"
"What are these voices you hear, Edgar? What do they say to you?"
"What's that you say? I'm a bit deaf this evening."
"I was asking about your voices. I was asking what they say to you."
"There's only one voice there, Matt."
Okay, so there's only one voice. What does it say to you?"
"Well, if you didn't want the pickled gherkin, I'll get one for myself."
"No, you don't. Sit down and tell me about this voice of yours."
"Yeah. It's an old man's voice."
"And what does he say to you?"
"Well, not a great deal. He always sounds as though he has other matters on his mind. Snooker tables, things like that."
Yeah, but when he does speak, what does he say to you?"
"He said you wouldn't like a pickled gherkin. Pardon?"
It was some time before I saw Ferns again and spoke to him. We talked about the land and old riddles. Sid skulked and sulked. He did no work. In the morning he stayed in bed till it was time to go to the pub. In the afternoon he snored and slavered in the studio. In the evenings, we quarrelled.
"I want to go home."
"Well, bloody well go then."
"Will you come with me?"
"Hmm." "What does that snort mean?"
"You know."
"When I first met you, you said you hated England. You said you'd never go back. Never in a million years. You said you hated its smugness, its blandness. You hated its lies. But you came back. And now you're smug and bland and you're a stranger. Everyone's a stranger in this country. You're all strangers to each other. How can I draw strangers?"
"Easy, my darling. Draw yourself."
"Nincompoops. The whole lot of them. Nincompoops. He's got the wrong trousers on again. What am I to do with him? Pardon?"
I bumped into Henry, Mr. Flower, later that week. I was at the cattle mart. I wasn't there to buy cattle. I never went into the auction ring, never once. I just wandered round the pens looking at the beasts, which were bound for slaughter, which were bound for fetlocked, dew-silky summer streams and midge-fested meadows. I thought we had lots in common, the glove-eyed cattle and I.
Good morning, Norma.
Oh, it's you. You startled me. What are you doing here?
Oh, isn't that?
I've never seen you here before.
I've never been here before.
Then why?
Why now? Well, I suppose you could say I'm here to make friends and influence people.
I don't understand.
Then let me explain over lunch.
I let him take me to lunch. Why? I didn't resist. Why? I felt like a beast going to its slaughter. He took hold of my arm and led me to the swish little French restaurant in the crook-legged, cobble-crazed alley at the back of the market square. I'd longed to go there ever since we moved in here, but Sid refused point blank. I once had French chow and hoboken, he said. Never again, honey, never. So I went with Henry, Mr. Flower, to the restaurant at the back of the market square and ate the most delicious food and drank the finest of wines.
Did you enjoy it?
It was wonderful.
Good.
Thank you. You still haven't told me why you went to the mart to make friends and influence people.
There was no need. You know the school. Everyone knows the score. As soon as I've settled in, well, it's goodbye, Edgar. Finish off your life drinking yourself to death. Let me send you on your way with a triple vodka.
I think that's incredibly nasty.
So is the cattle mart. Ask the beasts. May I take you for lunch again? Do you like visiting country houses? We could visit country houses and inspect the grounds. We could go to a race meeting. Do you like race meetings? We could have an affair. Do you like having affairs, Alma? I do.
Alma! Alma, where the hell are you?
Here, in the arbor.
What's the arbor?
It's here, you oaf.
Oh, right.
Hi.
Hi. You're looking pleased with yourself?
Am I?
Yes. What do you want?
I want us to give dinner to Henry tomorrow night.
Henry?
Mr. Flower.
I know it's Mr. Flower. Why do you want to give him dinner?
To celebrate.
Celebrate what?
Our deal.
Deal?
Yeah. I've done a deal with him. For my cartoons, he's going to give me $1,000 a throw.
What?
It's true. I give him a cartoon each week, and he gives me $1,000.
I don't understand. Edgar asked you to do this. It was his idea, yet he could only offer you $40. And the boy wonder's offering you $1,000. How come?
Because the boy wonder, as you put it so aptly with your great literary skills, Alma, uses his head.
Yes, but Edgar...
Edgar didn't think further than the end of his blue-bottled nose. You don't buy the cartoon for one newspaper alone. You buy it for all the newspapers in the group. 38 of them. You syndicate it. Great idea, huh? Each paper pays around $30 each. I get $1,000. Henry gets all the plaudits.
And Edgar? What about Edgar? It was his idea to get you to draw for the paper. Does he get no credit?
Edgar ran out of credit years ago. Decades ago. From the moment Edgar was born, he was in the red.
How very sweet of you, Sid. How generous of spirit. How very loyal to a caring friendship.
Sure, Alma, sure.
I hate you. How can you produce these cartoons anyway? You keep telling me you can't work here. You keep telling me you've dried up. You won't be able to turn up with the goods.
I'll produce, honey. No matter what, I'll produce. I'm a pro, you see. I do the business, baby. That's the difference between your kind and mine. I produce. You talk. That's the score. Nothing more. Nothing less.
I see. Have another drink, Sid. Milk for the pussies, perhaps?
The day before yesterday. Pardon? When I walked out from here in the midsummer days when I was young with my years, I took with me a fiddle and a tin of treacle biscuits. Yeah, that's what I did. Oh, I mustn't go off to bed. Not yet. If I go off to bed, who'll do the serving and look after everything? There's only me to look after the whole house. In the old days, we used to have generals and barons and admirals sit down to dinner. But now we send for the post office clerk and the station master. Even they aren't all that keen to come. Who can blame them? There's nothing in the house these days but backache pills.
I wanted to give Henry, Mr. Flower, thin gruel and sour snot-green sea tripes for his dinner, the ineluctable modality of the inedible. But instead I pushed out the boat. I gave him Whitstable oysters, langoustine and clams, a navarine of lamb, artichokes and celery braised in cider, rhubarb fool and Wiltshire cream, fine cheeses, fine wines. Unfortunately, I couldn't get hold of Deadly Nightshade for Sid for love or money. I decided we'd dine out on the terrace. I lit flares and we watched the moth singe. The dusk sang soft songs to itself in the thickets. Night dawdled behind the moon-distant hills. We took drinks before dinner. Sid and his guest talked. I sat silent and watched them. Well, gentlemen, I think it's time to eat, don't you? What would you care for, Mr. Flower? The rich of a rasher fried with herring?
Oh, he gawped like a slap-happy haddock. I chuckled and rose to my feet, somewhat unsteadily, I might add. But before I could move, a figure appeared at the French door. He moved onto the terrace, into the light of the flares. He wore a black jacket and a white waistcoat, and his flimsied hair crackled coarsely over his collar. I sat down on my chair, hard. Sid dropped his drink, and his mouth clonked open. It was Franz. He muttered to himself, and he carried the tray with an extravagant flourish high above his head on crooked arm, his hand bent back at the wrist. He came to the table and bowed.
Whitstable oysters, madam. Whitstable oysters, langoustine and clams. My apologies for the lack of barons and admirals at table. Pardon?
That's all right, Ferns. I quite understand.
Ferns? Ferns? Who the hell is this guy, Alma?
Don't you know, my honey? Don't you know?
Shall I clear the crustaceans, madam? Pardon?
He potted off into the house, muttering to himself.
Oh, my Christ. Who is this? What's going on? What do you know about this, Henry? Is this guy local? Is he the village idiot or something? Is he...
Which guy? Which guy are you talking about?
The guy who... You didn't see him, did you?
I tell you, sir, I don't know what you're talking about. Do you know what he's talking about, Alma?
The labyrinth of lamb. Slightly overcooked, I fear. Pardon?
Fern served us the lamb and vegetables and poured out the wine. And then as we ate and we supped, he shuffled to the terrace crumbled parapet and looked out over the night-drenched gardens and said...
In the old days, all you could see out there was cherry trees. Yes, masses of cherry trees. And time was when dried cherries used to be sent to London. By the wagon load, they fetched a lot of money. Soft and juicy, those dried cherries were. Sweet and tasty. People had the knack of it in those days. all those years ago. Sometimes it seems just like the day before yesterday. Pardon?
And with that, he potted away into the house. We didn't see him again for the remainder of the evening. We ate our cheese and slobbered our port. Henry and Sid finished off the bottle of rye. And then Henry, Mr. Flower, pushed back his chair and stood up.
A most excellent dinner, Alva. Superb. And now, if you'll excuse me, I think it's high time I wended my way.
You didn't see him, Henry. You didn't see the guy with the long hair and the white waistcoat.
I
escorted Henry to his car. We left Sid slumped in his chair, his face pale, his hair awry.
What's the matter with the man? Is he drunk? Yes, he's out of his skull, isn't he?
No more than usual. No. No, I don't want to be kissed. Not now.
That's a great shame, Alma. I'm truly sorry.
Good night, Henry.
When I got back to the terrace, Sid was still slumped in his chair. He hadn't moved. Should he have a nightcap?
I saw him, Alma. I heard him.
Have a glass of grappa, Sid. No, even better, have a glass of cherry brandy. Cherry, Sid. Get it? An illusion, my darling, straight out of the dustbin. Who's a clever girl, then?
Nincompoops. Nincompoops, a whole lot of them. When I walked out that midsummer morn with my rolled-up tent and my tin of treacle biscuits, the master... Oh. When the master died, he brought his body home in a box marked for oysters. It seems just as though it were the day before yesterday. Well, I'm a bit deaf, you see. Pardon?
I didn't speak to Ferns for days and days after that. I saw him in the gardens, pottering and shuffling and muttering to himself. But always by the time I got to the spot, he had disappeared, and all that remained was the faint whiff of patchouli and nuts. I wish we'd had a dog. He could have eaten the nuts. One morning, Sid said,
"Where's that guy, Ferns? I haven't seen him for days. I haven't heard his voice."
I shrugged my shoulders and smiled sweetly.
What are you doing to him, Mama?
What on earth are you talking about?
You're hiding him from me, aren't you? You don't want to share him with me. You want to keep him all to yourself. Why? Why? I can't work. I can't produce. I've dried up. They're crying out for coffee, stateside. They're crying out for coffee here. I can't turn it out, Alma. I can't produce the goods. That guy, it's him. He's stopping me. From the moment we moved into this house, he's been destroying me. I felt it the second I stepped over the front doorstep. He's drying me up. He's shriveling me. He's turning me to cinders. For Christ's sake, Alma, who is this guy?
I thought I saw a hawfinch in the garden this morning.
What?
A hawfinch. Big and bold. The harlot's cry from street to street shall weave old England's winding sheet. Now there's a notion for you, Sid. England, at the end of the millennium. A perfect comment on the country. The harlot's cry and the winding sheet. Let that be your theme, Sid. Get drawing, honey lamb. Get producing.
Hello.
Alma?
Yes. Who is this?
Me.
Ah. You. What can I do for you, Henry?
I'd like to take you for lunch. Did you hear me? I said I'd like to.
Yes. You may take me to lunch.
Splendid. I thought we might...
Good.
The French place at the back of the market square, 12:30 tomorrow.
Well, that's a bit... Yes, fine. 12:30 tomorrow. I look forward to it.
Strangely enough, Henry, so do I. I arrived at the restaurant early. The waiter led me to the table reserved for us with a squiffy card, and I ordered vodka and tonic with a slice of lime. I was perusing the menu when I heard that familiar voice and looked up and saw that familiar figure. The waiter led him to the table, and he said,
"Good afternoon, madam. I've been looking forward to this all morning. Pardon?"
"So have I. I've been looking forward to it ever since you rang last evening."
"Good, I'm pleased."
He took the menu, and he ordered our meal without consulting me. He did it with confidence and aplomb. I like that. I like men with confidence and aplomb. He wore his black jacket and white waistcoat. His creek-long hair scratched his collar. His hand trembled. He raised his glass to me, and he said,
"The mistress is home. Home at last. Now I can die happy."
"Tell me about your travels when you were a young man."
"I was immense. Just one single month in that land of steep-stepping streets, roast hidden beans, exhausted dogs and pious dust. And I could speak the language fluently. Fluently, I tell you. I played my fiddle on street corners for sparse potatoes. I stayed at sop-stained inns and slept on straw among the hooves of mules, and the carter's wives suckle their children and at dead of night coupled with their mates. I burned churches to cinders. I felt the sniff and reek of war. I sacked nunneries. I destroyed a tank with my bare hands. I brought down a bomber with a single shot from my musket. I chopped firewood with the braseros and stole windfall cherries. Would you care for new potatoes, madam?"
"Thank you, Ferns."
"She didn't stay, Edgar.
She went out and she didn't tell you where she was going."
"That's right, Edgar. Right.
Well, I know where she is. I saw her not half an hour ago."
"Where?"
"Not far from here."
"Where precisely?"
"Well, not far from here."
"What was she doing, Edgar?"
"She was having lunch."
"Alone?"
"No."
"She was having lunch? She was not alone? Who was she with, Edgar?"
"Henry Flower."
"Henry Flower? Henry Flower, for Christ's sake.
Child of champagne."
"Champagne? Why the hell do we want to drink champagne?"
"To celebrate."
"Celebrate what?"
"The end of the road. The loss of my job."
"Oh.
You're not surprised. You knew all along. You knew that Henry Flower had come here to take my job. Everyone in town knew."
"Well, I don't know about that, Edgar. I mean..."
"I knew right from the start. He told me."
"Henry?"
"Good grief, no."
"Then who?"
"The old man."
"The old man? Which old man?"
"You know, Sid. You know very well. Don't be such a nincompoop. Pardon?"
It was a lovely lunch. I thoroughly enjoyed it. When we had finished and drunk our cognac, Ferns pulled back my chair and bowed stiffly from the waist. "Thank you, Ferns. May I drive you home?"
"Presently, madam. Presently. First, with your permission, I should like to show you the scratchings of my childhood and my youth."
"How lovely."
"That gentleman who was here at Easter, he had over a gallon of pickled gherkins." "A gallon of pickled gherkins. Imagine."
The car was warm and cheeky. It chuckled at me as I settled myself behind the wheel. Ferns directed me to a narrow valley plunging and twisting into dampness from a high parched plateau craked with corn. The village was stark and steep, and the narrow road begrudging. We got out of the car, and I followed Ferns along a cramped and shifty lane. We came to a cottage that stood on a steep bank above a lake.
"This is where I was born."
"How lovely." Ferns prowled.
With our mother, we made 8 in the cottage. There were 3 floors. There was a huge white attic running the length of the house. The girls slept there. The roof was so thin that the rain and bats filtered through, and you could hear a bird land on the tiles. There you are, madam. The house where I was born. Would you like to see the school, madam?
I'd love to see the school, Franz. He took hold of my hand. It seemed a perfectly normal thing to do. We walked slowly down the steep, wind-funneled valley. Sometimes, our shoulders touched. It seemed perfectly normal.
There used to be Roman snails here. Most of the women had goiters.
And so we came to the village school. It was a small stone barn divided by a partition into 2 rooms.
One for the infants, one for the big ones. I learned to play the fiddle here. One of the teachers wore a ginger wig. Listen. Can you hear?
I listened. And I heard. I heard the playground tumble of children's voices. I heard the commotion of children. I heard the arse whack of teachers' beatings. I heard the shrieks and wails. I heard the rumble of a winter stove. I heard the shriek and wail of a man thwacking an ailing fiddle.
One day, quite without warning, a man came and pulled out 3 of my teeth.
We walked farther on down the valley where the cattle walked sideways along the slopes and crows pecked in the scum of the limestone springs. Ferns held my hand more tightly. Our shoulders touched more closely. It seemed perfectly natural.
Living in this valley was like living in a bean pot.
We walked on. Once I stumbled and Ferns grasped me by the waist to steady me. He held me for quite a while, and I felt his breath grow young on my neck. It seemed perfectly normal. It was the time of haymaking, but there was no machinery here, no squinky roar of tractor, no snarl fumes of diesel, no sky track of jet plane, no pylons. Just the gentle swish of scythe and the soft whirr of mower. We came to a haycock. And Fern spoke.
Here.
Here?
Just here. This is where I saw the girl.
Ah.
She had piercing green eyes and full thighs and long legs and corn straw blonde hair. She took me by the hand and we crawled beneath a wagon. She gave me a jug of cider to sip. Never to be forgotten. Never to be forgotten. My knees trembled. I did not know what to do. And then she pulled me down. She pulled me down onto her. She pulled me down deep into her. When we'd done, she pulled off her boots and stuffed them with flowers. And then she did the same with mine. She stuffed my boots with flowers.
It was very late when I got home. Sid was already in bed. From the hallway I could hear his snoring and his grunts of panic. He left the light on in the study. There was a half-empty bottle of rye on the table. There was a drawing on his drawing board. How strange. How curious. It was a drawing of Ferns, and the nose was superb. Very softly I closed the door, and very softly I picked up the telephone and dialed a number. Hi. You're not in bed, then?
I'm sorry, but I don't know
who... It's me.
Ah, good old you. How can I help?
I was just ringing to thank you for lunch. I enjoyed every minute of it. Every second.
So did I.
It was gorgeous seeing where you were born. The cottage. The school.
The fields full of haymaking.
Oh, yes. That above all.
And you still have the flowers in your boots?
Oh, yes.
Me too. And the taste of cider on my lips.
So have I. Particularly the taste of cider.
Good night, Alma.
Good night, Henry. It was gorgeous seeing where you were born. The cottage.
With only me to run the whole house.
Next morning, Sid burst into my bedroom.
Alma! Alma, for Christ's sake, wake up!
What is it, sir?
It's Ferns.
Ferns? What about Ferns?
He's dead.
What?
I found him on the terrace this morning with his neck slit wide open from chin to ear.
What? What?
Someone has dissected his neck.
I followed Sid down to the terrace. Sure enough, Ferns lay there, all scrunched and dead. It was the most beautiful wound he had on his neck. So neat. So assured.
He looks pleased with himself.
Yes, Sid. So he does. Henry went away. He sent me a note to tell me. He went away. Edgar went away too. He went to live in Ireland. Just before he left, he came round for tea. Sid locked himself away in the studio. I said to Edgar, "Why are you going to Ireland, Edgar?"
"To meet up with old chums."
"Chums? You have chums in Ireland?"
"Indeed I have. Martin Cunningham, J.J. Malloy, Corny Keller, Paddy Dignam, old Giltrap and his scrawny mongrel, to name but a few. Ah, yes, Alma. We'll have the crack. We'll drink cider at Ormond's restaurant, no doubt, and watch the vice-regal procession pass us by. We'll stand at Nelson's Pillar and watch the trams set off of Blackrock and Kingston and Terrymuir and Rathgar."
"Trams, Edgar? But there are no trams these days. They've long since disappeared." And he smiled, and he chuckled, and he said,
"You know, we have nothing in the house but backache pills."
Later he sent us a letter from Dublin to tell us he'd seen a girl buy a pound and a half of Denny's sausages. Sid began to work. He worked like a demon. It was just like when first we met. Up at dawn to his studio, drawing, singing, stalking the four corners of the room, crying out in triumph and cackling with delight.
"I've cracked it, Alma. God damn it, I'm producing again."
"I'm very pleased for you, Sid."
"I got the key to it, Alma. England, at the end of the millennium, it's Ferns."
"Ferns?"
"Yes, Ferns."
"I don't understand."
"Think about it, baby. Think about it."
"Look, there's a hawfinch over there." And then it was time to leave. We had to go back. We packed up our valises, we settled our debts. The taxi from the station came to pick us up. We drove slowly down the gravel-crunching drive. Three mute swans wheezed low above the cedars. Dunnocks whispered. We slowed as we reached the gatehouse. I turned to look back at the mellow of the house. And as I did, a figure stepped out from the shadows of the gatehouse. A familiar figure, with black jacket and white waistcoat. I jumped out of the car. I walked slowly, timidly towards the man with the creaking hair and the trembling hands. We looked deep into each other's eyes silently for quite some moments. And then he spoke.
"They've gone. They forgot me. Never mind. I'll sit here again.
Life slipped by just as if I'd never lived at all. I lie down a bit. I got no strength left. Got nothing left. Nothing at all. I can hear a fiddle playing. Can you hear the fiddle, man?
Yes, son. I can hear the fiddle.
That's good, madam. I am pleased. I shall tell the mistress when she returns with the master. A gallon of pickled gherkin. Imagine it. The man is a nincompoop.
I climbed back slowly into the car, and Sid said,
"What was it, honey?"
And I said, "Oh, nothing. I almost thought I'd forgotten something. I think I can feel flowers in my shoes."
In The House Swap by Peter Tinniswood, Alma was played by Penelope Wilton, Sid by William Hootkins, and Ferns by Peter Vaughan. Edgar was John Hartley, and Henry, Nigel Carrington. The House Swap was directed by Gordon House.